Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Above Politics Show. I am Homer Fife.
And I'm Martin Bain. And golly, the excitement that the American people must be feeling now you're getting closer to your general election.
My heart cannot take any more.
I'm sure it probably can. And it's it's not been the most exciting week, I don't think, in the election campaign.
No, and that's kind of strange. Normally, you would expect the week before the election to... We should have surprises and we should have breaking news, and what we wind up with is just kind of more of the same.
Mind you, I mean, certainly in Europe and a lot in the UK, you know, some of the stuff I've seen on the sort of internet and then on the sort of press and even on the TV and radio is that, you know, everyone's sort of calling this, well, you know, there's no point the Republicans going out to vote because, you know, Barack Obama's already won, which I think is probably a bit unfair and harsh.
Ah, but that could very well be a Democrat tactic. If you can discourage enough conservatives from going out to vote, then you're going to get a Democratic landslide, which is, I'm sure, what they're after.
But, you know, that would imply, Homer, a huge manipulation of the whole media across the world. I mean, it's not just in the U.S. I mean, I could understand it in the U.S., but I even see this, shockingly, Sky News, the BBC, the newspapers. You know, they're all sort of saying, you know, that a lot of the polls are sort of saying that this is a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, but, you know, I was listening to Rush today, and he was talking about a website called HillBuzz. And on that, a young lady named Sarah P., who, of course, states that wasn't her real name, she is apparently a worker in the Obama camp. And she come right out, and if you go to Rush Limbaugh, you can read his transcripts there. But she's come right out and admitted to having an entire team of people, actually several teams situated all across the United States, whose entire job is to throw out that sort of false information. They are mass posting comments on YouTube and that sort of thing in order to discourage as many conservative voters as they can to keep them from voting.
Which, if you take what Sarah P. said, is that maybe the Democrats are actually more scared of what the Republican machine can actually do and deliver for McCain.
That's highly likely. And you also have to look at the other side of the coin and imagine that the conservative side isn't doing exactly the same thing. You know, possibly that we just don't have a whistleblower that's come out on the conservative side. And me being a conservative, I'll fully admit that anything that's happening on the liberal side of the coin is probably happening just as much on the conservative side.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if one of them were to put their hand up and said, we've been squeaky clean, I think we'd all look at them strangely and raise an eyebrow and go, just how stupid you think we all are.
Once the laughing died down, you're correct.
Absolutely. But one of the things that I was sort of just looking around, I was looking on the BBC website, was just the amount of money that Barack Obama and John McCain have raised. And just on the BBC website, it was talking, they have raised $970 million and probably spent around about $875 million. And I just think, you know, with the economic turmoil, not only in the States, but across the world, you know, these are just staggering sums of money. I mean, imagine if they said, no, let's not spend all this money on the campaign. Let's donate this money to, you know, helping the people that need it, improving the economy, social projects. I mean, $1 billion is $1 billion. It's a huge sum of money.
I would like to just kind of bring back, did you watch the 30-minute infomercial Obama put on last night?
I've got to say I haven't. I'm sure it's on YouTube and I will go and find it, but I didn't go and see it.
Well, let me tell you, it was basically, the best way to describe it would be a parade of depression. The entire 30 minutes he spent talking about how horribly depressed the United States is, how bad the economy is, blah, blah, blah. Now, my question to you is, along the lines of what you just brought up, if the economy is that bad and we are that depressed, how in heaven's name can we afford to spend $1 billion on an election? It just doesn't work out. I mean, if you take a look at it, the voters need to look at voting records and make a decision themselves and not pay a whole lot of attention to this hype. $1 billion on an election is an incredible amount of money. Amazing.
Yeah, you're right. And these were just the figures I saw for Barack Obama and John McCain. If you factor in potentially all the amount of money, you know, because you can imagine that they sort of on the Democrat side, the amount of money that, Edwards and Clinton must have raised as well, and you know, probably to a lesser degree on the Republican side. You've got to be thinking that the American people and the American business community has given this campaign, I've got to be thinking somewhere near $1.5 billion. And you're right. I just think it's absolutely mind-blowing that, you know, the American people are that sort of hard up, or the country's that hard up, yet you guys can still find, you know, that kind of money to fund a presidential campaign for your next president.
Well, I mean, it's all tactics. If you have whatever party you have sitting in the White House, the other party has to make what they've done for the last 4 or 8 years. In this case, you have to make that look horrible. I mean, if the Democrats come out and said that, okay, the economy is not that bad, everything's okay, well, that just defeats their purpose and is going to hurt them in the election. So they're going to come out and make it a lot worse than it is. And you got to kind of anticipate that. If there was a Democrat in the White House, the conservatives would be doing it. You know, that's the thing I think that people need to understand. In an election like this, there is no single side to an issue. Anything that the one is doing, the other is doing the same thing. It's all tactics to get into the White House. And then once they get in there, then they can institute their own policies. But prior to that, they're going to say anything they can to get there.
But it staggers me that both sides of this think the American people are potentially that stupid. I mean, you know, even just looking at it just from an economic point of view, you know, stock prices have started to sort of come back up again. The price of gas, which I think is a huge issue across the world, but certainly in the States, you know, the whole fact of people saying, oh, you know, gas is costing me $4 a gallon, gas is costing me $5 a gallon. I just sort of think that's, you know, that big advert that Barack Obama did maybe wasn't as well timed as it should have done, because people are probably seeing gas is coming down, stock prices are going up, therefore their 401 plans are probably looking slightly more healthy. You know, the government is potentially pumping billions of dollars in to help the banks to try and get lending going. And I suspect to paint the doom and gloom picture, which, you know, is the same in the UK. We've had analysts saying it's doom and gloom. And in certain sectors, I would still agree with that. But fundamentally, the share prices are improving. Even shares in banks are improving. In the UK, there's a huge measure which is called the interbank lending rate. And that started to move down, and that implies the banks are lending to each other on a short-term basis, which means that rate is coming down. I suspect that similar rate in the States is also starting to drop. The other thing I've seen is currencies aren't probably as volatile. So I'm just not sure whether, you know, these guys think the American people are that stupid and gullible that they're going to believe all of this.
I will only say this for risk of getting in trouble, Martin. It amazes me every election cycle just exactly what the American people will believe. It just never stops amazing me.
And I think, you know, I'd say that's probably true across the world, that, you know, when you come to a presidential election and there's maybe one, two or three parties who have the chance of getting it, you know, that's, I suppose, is one of the interesting things is that it's the depths that these people will actually go to actually get elected.
Now Martin, I want to ask you a question, and I don't want to get too partisan here, but what is your take on the fact that every time Barack Obama's been asked if he's a socialist, he has avoided the question? How do you feel about that?
I suppose coming from a country that, you know, has a long tradition of socialism, I mean, in the UK you have the Labour Party, which is regarded as socialist, you have the Conservative Party, who are regarded as, you know, right wing. I mean, people try and sort of say that the Labour Party is equivalent to the Democratic Party and the Conservative Party equivalent to the Republican Party. I think it is interesting that no politician in America would want to be called socialist, because I think a lot of people will think socialism, communism, and I think there's still this very negative feeling about anything that's sort of left of the Democrat Party is seen as bad and wrong, and it's what was wrong with Russia, it's what's wrong with China, it's what's wrong with Cuba, you know, it's what's wrong with certain parts of South America. So I suspect he needed to dodge that question, or he had no choice but to dodge it, because he couldn't come out and say, actually, I probably do have leanings towards being a socialist. You know, if you start going down that road, then is he going to say, well, I think we ought to nationalize more, we ought to have some kind of, you know, nationwide healthcare, socialized medicine, for example? I suspect that's a slippery slope that he really had no choice but to avoid it.
And I agree. It's tactics, you know, it's election tactics. Now, while I'm in the mood for asking questions, have you heard about Obama's aunt?
I did hear something about this when people went to go and interview her, and she sort of went, no, I'll talk to you after the election, which, you know, you do have to raise an eyebrow and think, why is she saying I won't be interviewed? Because, you know, she's got to be thinking, hang on a minute, this is the time I can make hay, I can maybe sell my story to some people. Hey, I'm Barack Obama's aunt, listen to what I have to say.
Well, I think that you have to look at the totality of the circumstance. They find this woman in Boston living in what can only be conservatively described as a slum, and they go to interview the lady, and she says she can't talk until after November 4th. However, she did say that after November 4th, she would be available to talk about the issues that they were trying to ask her. And I think what is blaringly strikes you in the face about all of this is Obama's comment upon being interviewed. I believe it was last month. He says, quote, now this is Barack Obama's very words, "It is that fundamental belief, I am my brother's keeper, I am my sister's keeper, that makes this country work. If he truly believes that in his heart, then why does he have an aunt living in a slum in Boston, and he has the brother living in a grass hut somewhere, and I have no idea where, I've just slipped my mind. I just think, oh, it's in Nairobi, I'm sorry. His brother lives in Nairobi and makes $12 a year. Go ahead.
It is strange, you know, why, you know, he's clearly a successful man even before he came to the presidency. You know, he's successful, you know, he's had a career, he's probably made a great deal of money. You know,
he made enough to spend $1 billion on an election. Okay, half a billion. Sorry, it's only one side, but he made that much.
Yeah, and you know, and you think so. I mean, you know, ultimately, I don't think any American would want the money that they've given the Republicans, the Democrats, and potentially Barack and John McCain helping members of their family to improve themselves. But it does seem incongruous that, you know, here is a man who's saying that he wants a fairer society in the state, and potentially his aunt is living in what's regarded as absolute squalor and a slum. I would be interested to see whether anyone's going to tackle Obama directly on this one and turn around and say, sir, how do you explain this?
Yeah, I think, too, an interesting issue is the number of polls that have been done. Up to date, there have been 300% more polls taken this year in this election cycle than it was in 2004. And I can't help but believe that we need to turn away from these polls. And every single time that we have put our faith in the polls, they've showed up wrong. And I'm not just talking about things like the Bradley effect and that sort of thing, but I'm talking about the way the polls are done. If the Democratic Party was to hire me to do a poll, I'm going to give them a poll that they like because they're the ones that are paying me the money. So I'm going to start calling houses or homes or people in New York or California or Detroit or one of your other basic Democrat footholds. I'm not going to call Middle America or the Southeast or places where I'm going to get differing opinions. And the dependence on the polls is just amazes me. And I think that come November the 4th, or actually November the 5th, we're going to find that these polls are, in fact, not an accurate representation of the way things are going.
And I think that's the real exciting thing here is, you know, if you believe the polls, you know, I think the gap is narrowing, but, you know, they've all said that, you know, Barack Obama is going to become the next president. You know, I just wonder whether the American people might actually wake up on November the 4th and think, hey, should we have some fun? And I think a lot of it is, you know, people, I think, will say what's maybe right when someone phones them or stops them on the street. But as you say, it's fundamentally different when you're actually sitting. You've drawn the curtain behind you. You're sitting in front of that machine. You're thinking, okay, who am I going to vote for? You know, the first thing you think about is, well, who's actually going to be best for the economy and is actually going to ensure that the dollar in my pocket stays valuable and that I will continue to get a dollar in my pocket every month. And that's probably the big fundamental. You know, I don't think people are I think people are less interested in, you know, is the war in Iraq and Afghanistan the right thing? Is the bonuses being paid to bankers in Wall Street right? I think people are just interested in, well, hang on a minute, is the dollar in my pocket safe?
And I agree with you. Right now, September the 11th, 2001, seems like an eternity away. But what doesn't seem like an eternity away, like you said, is the dollar in my pocket. Is it safe? Is it secure? My 401k, is it going to be there? Or is it going to be taxed? Am I going to lose my pension? And am I going to wind up having to work until I'm 75 years old? Every time a voter walks into that booth, they're going to ask themselves that question or those questions. And that to me, I think, is going to be what really tells the tale on this election.
Absolutely. One of the things we have coming up is, for those of you whose memory goes back a little bit, in show 21, we were fortunate enough to interview Wayne Root, who is the vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. And we were very fortunate to get an interview with him, as he promised he'd do for us. We said we'd get hold of him just before Election Day, and we had the opportunity to do that. So let's hear what Wayne Root, who is the vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party, had to say.
I'm talking with Libertarian vice presidential candidate Wayne Root today, and it's been quite an eventful race. We've got approximately 1 week left to go before the November 4th polling. So, Wayne, how are you?
I'm doing great, Justin. How are you?
We've been staying very, very busy here at the Above Politics show. Say, give us a little insight. What's it like to be on the campaign trail as you go into the home stretch?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm kind of a different kind of candidate. Remember, we're third-party candidates, and so what I've been doing mainly is media, and more media. You know, I've been on Fox News quite a few times. I think it's three times in the last couple of weeks. I've been on radio nonstop. Generally, a typical day for me might start with a radio interview at 4:35 in the morning. The phone rings. My head comes off the pillow. I answer the phone, and I realize it's a radio interview, and I go straight from a dead sleep in the pitch dark to doing a 20-minute, monologue on the telephone to with thousands of people listening, and sometimes my day doesn't end till another interview at 10, 11 o'clock at night. So it's just nonstop media trying to get the message out, because when you're a third-party candidate, you know, you're not showing up to an Obama rally, you know, where there's 50,000 people waiting for you, and I don't see the point in showing up to a rally with 100 people or 200 people. To me, you're never getting your message out if you're going to traveling around the country to meet 200 people. So I'd much rather do 10 radio interviews a day and maybe that way reach a 500,000 people. And so I've chosen to make this a media campaign based literally out of my office in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Well, by golly, I think you're off to a good start, and I think you have the right idea, because podcasts like this one, they call it the new media, but we reach more than a million people at any one time. So I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are still hearing you for the very first time. So if you would, please, give us a little rundown about who you are and what your agenda is.
Yeah, let's start with my website, because if you're hearing me for the first time, my name is Wayne Allen Root. I'm the Libertarian vice presidential candidate on the presidential ticket of Bob Barr Wayne Root. And our website is root4america.com, R-O-O-T, 4-F-O-R, America.com. And our agenda is pretty simple. Get government out of the lives of typical American citizens and taxpayers. I'm what I would call myself a citizen politician. I'm a small businessman. I'm a homeschool dad. I'm a second-generation American. I'm an SOB, a son of a butcher. I'm from the what you might call the frontier western state of Nevada, where we love guns and hate taxes. And so I consider myself a very unusual candidate in the role of on a presidential ticket. In modern political history, there's never been a small businessman before like me. There's never been a homeschool dad like me. There's never been a Nevadan before. And to kind of make it all complete, to tie the picture together, it's the first time in history two college classmates have run on competing presidential tickets because my college classmate, class of 83, Columbia University, was Barack Obama.
So now, tell me, just out of curiosity, I had when I left college, I had a roommate who made off with some of my stuff. Does Barack owe you anything? Like,
I thought you were going to say made out with your girlfriend, made off with your stuff, made out with my girlfriend. No, Barack and I didn't know each other. We were classmates, but, you know, Columbia is a pretty big school and must have been a class of, I don't know, 600-700 kids we graduated in, and we didn't run in the same circles, and I never got a chance to know him.
Well, one of the things you have gotten a chance to know a great deal about is just life on the trail. So what's the one food that you never want to see again?
Well, I'm a real healthy eater, you know, so as you campaign in places like the Midwest, people stuff a lot of unhealthy food in your hand. It all tastes great, but, you know, I'm a guy who really lives 24 hours a day, the healthy lifestyle. I work out every day, even when I'm campaigning or when I have 10 media interviews a day set up. You know, whatever I have to do, I make sure I get up an hour, hour and a half earlier to work out hard. Both aerobically and with weights, and I eat a lot of healthy food, a lot of Chinese food, a lot of sushi, a lot of Thai food. So I could certainly do without the typical Midwest fare of hot dogs and hamburgers.
Oh, my. Well, now, speaking of things you can do without, I'm sure you have got a lot to say on the matter of this whole bailout, so just... rip into it.
How did you ever know, Justin?
we have spies everywhere, and they tell us these things.
Yeah, well, I'm not a big fan of the bailout at all. I'm someone who believed in the first day and wrote about it on my Root for America commentary. So you can go to Root for America and go back and look at it and see the date before they ever approved the bailout. I said they were going to approve it. Even when the first time when they voted against it, Congress, I said, don't worry, it'll be back because this country is just too corrupt and the political system too corrupt to not be back. They'll throw in some more goodies, some things that are bad for American taxpayers and bad for America, and then they'll come back with those bribes and they'll force Congress to vote for it. And quite a few people will switch their votes, and that's exactly what happened. And what really sickens me is that, you know, they added about $150 billion worth of goodies, which I call bribes, to get certain congressmen and senators to vote for it, and they fell for it, and they did. What did any of that have to do with saving the American economy? They just added on $150 billion in debt for our children and grandchildren. They should have just called it a bribe. Instead, they said the whole bill would save our economy. They added you probably aren't aware of this, Justin, because I've been on quite a few shows and mentioned it, and so far no one else was aware of this. This is a fact. This is not an if or a maybe. They added in the bailout bill new wording that makes it legal for the IRS to literally set up undercover stings against American citizens, American taxpayers. Basically, what the IRS is now allowed to do by law because of the bailout bill. What this has to do with the American economy failing, I have no idea. But they made it legal for the IRS to use taxpayer money to set up sting operations, take ads in the newspaper, advertise as accountants, set up a shingle in a storefront, pay the rent with taxpayer money, and then when you show up as a customer wanting your tax forms filled out for the year, the IRS agent, posing as an accountant, says, you know, here's a deduction that really isn't legal or it's questionable. Would you like to take it? They'll never catch you. And then when you say yes, they arrest you for income tax evasion. Did you know that was legalized literally for the first time in American history by the bailout bill?
That sounds positively criminal, and no, I didn't know that. How does that make you feel as a small businessman? That sounds like entrapment to me.
It doesn't even sound like entrapment. It is entrapment. It's disgusting. It's outrageous. It's wrong. And I just think it's more examples of government, big government, encroaching upon us. Big Brother is here. The nanny state is here, and it's more all the more reason to vote libertarian, because even if you think that Barack Obama is going to give you too much big government and therefore you are going to vote for John McCain, he supported the same bailout bill. He didn't question the IRS entrapment. He didn't question the $150 billion in basically earmarks, which he loves to call waste and says he'll fight every second as president. Well, here he had a chance a couple of months before the election, and he approved a bill with $150 billion in waste, and gosh knows how much more of it is actually wasted money for the taxpayers. You know, not only that, the entire bill basically nationalizes the banking system, at least partial nationalization of the banking system in the United States of America. It's socialism, not capitalism. And here John McCain and Barack Obama shook hands, put their arms around each other, gave each other a wonderful kiss, and sang Kumbaya together. And if that's what you want in your president, good luck and God bless. I don't think it's what most people want. I think once it's explained to them, they say, you know what? I think Wayne Root and Bob Barr are a fresh approach.
Now, what are you hearing by way of feedback from people just as you get out and around, because I'm sure you've got to be rubbing elbows with other business owners who feel like you do.
Oh, yeah, listen, the word on the street was that in Congress it was going 9-1 and 10-1, the phone calls against the bailout, and our congressman just went ahead and voted for it anyway, because Bush and all the Democratic leaders, they all screamed together, you know, that the end of the world was coming and it had to happen. There had to be a bailout or we'd all be destroyed, and the economy would be destroyed, and the stock market would be destroyed. So explain to me, Justin, since the day of the bailout, how many hundreds of points has Wall Street fallen? So what do we need the bailout for? You know, they scream the sky is falling, the stock market is falling, if we don't pass the bill. They did pass the bill, and the sky is falling, the economy is falling, and the stock market is cratering. Therefore, the investors have weighed in, they're scared to death of Obama, and they're scared to death of the implications of this trillion-dollar bailout not working. And believe me when I tell you, it's not working.
So whose tax policy should we fear more, a McCain administration's tax policy or an Obama administration?
Well, listen, I'm no fan of either one, but McCain certainly is heads and tails above Obama. Obama, you know, long before McCain started using the word socialist, I was using it. I was saying that John McCain is 4 more years of the tragedy of George Bush, and Barack Obama is 4 years of Karl Marx. And I don't think our country really wants or craves or needs either one. So I'm no fan of either one, but, you know, all things considered, John McCain believes in big government, and Barack Obama believes in even bigger government, and taxing successful people, punishing success, redistributing wealth. Those are all words you'll never hear coming from John McCain. So, you know, if you're going to vote for the lesser of two evils, I'd say McCain's the lesser of two evils. I think voting for the lesser of two evils is a tragic mistake. People have done it for 50 years now, and you wonder why polls show 90% of all American voters believe beyond a shadow of a doubt that our country is headed in the wrong direction. 90% don't agree on anything in this country, but 90% can't stand where we're headed. And I like to say maybe you better look in the mirror, because you're voting either Republican or Democrat year after year, and you're wondering why we're on the wrong track. Maybe it's because you have been wasting your vote on the two parties that are ruining our country. Maybe it's time to finally take a chance on a third party that's different, that's unique, that won't cave to pressure, that tells it like it is, and most importantly, doesn't bribe the electorate with welfare and entitlements and corporate welfare. And that's Bob Barr and Wayne Root and the Libertarian ticket.
So what would the Libertarian policy be in this case?
Well, you mean as far as the bailout?
Yes.
And the issues that caused it? Well, you know, a lot of people aren't talking about the issues that caused all the economic meltdown that that led up to the bailout. It was government involvement that called it. I'm not, you know, totally I'm not allowing you to vilify Wall Street. I think it's a joke that McCain and Obama both have vilified Wall Street. But I'm not condoning Wall Street either. Of course there was greed. Greed's part of capitalism, and the most greedy part of capitalism is definitely found on Wall Street. But there's nothing wrong with that. That's what makes capitalism work. They're supposed to want to make more money. That's okay. The fact is they were merely capitalizing on idiotic programs created by the government. The government is the one that in 1977, under Jimmy Carter, put forth the Community Reinvestment Act that basically made it mandatory for banks to make more and more loans to people who had bad credit, to people who were low income, so that we could say more Americans are participating in home ownership and living the American dream. And it got basically, you know, they put that Community Reinvestment Act on steroids in 1997 under another Democratic president by the name of Bill Clinton, who wanted more and more minorities and low-income people to participate in the American dream and own a home. So they put pressure on banks. They said they'd fine them if they didn't bring their averages up of low-income people. Next thing you know, we've got a credit crisis. We've got a housing crisis. Millions of people are in houses they could never afford. They didn't know how to make payments as an owner. They didn't know how to pay insurance or property taxes. They were renters their whole lives, and they should have stayed renters, because they did not have the financial qualifications to qualify for a loan. So what we did is we allowed government to screw the entire American financial system up, and then we passed Sarbanes-Oxley, which was another overreaction of government regulation that basically created mark-to-market legislation that demanded that investment banks mark down everything they own each quarter to whatever the last sale was. Even if there was no sales and the market froze up, you'd have to mark it down to zero. Next thing you know, you mark down everything you own down to zero, and Bear Stearns is bankrupt. Lehman Brothers, bankrupt. Merrill Lynch, close to bankruptcy, had to sell itself to B of A to save it. Wachovia, close to bankruptcy, had to sell itself to save it. So, you know, here's your example of government getting involved in people's lives. I say you need less regulation. We need government out of the way of small business and out of the way of business in general.
So now let's wrap things up with the probably the hardest question I'm going to ask you here today. What would you say to somebody right now who is still undecided? Maybe they're thinking, I don't even know why I should go vote.
Well, I'd say, first of all, you know, it's kind of a cliche, but if you don't vote, then you have no right to have a complaint for the rest of your life. You know, voting is a wonderful, wonderful American privilege. We have this crazy idea in America that every human being has a right to vote, whether they're educated or not, whether they're bright or not, whether they own property or not. That's wonderful. We're the only country in the world that's said from the first day, every single person should be voting. And the few mistakes you made along the way, we said women shouldn't vote, we said blacks shouldn't vote, we changed all of that. So now every one of you has the right to vote. To give it up is an affront to someone who was once a slave and couldn't vote. It's an affront to a woman in the 1800s who couldn't vote. You now have a wonderful privilege, and you've got to take advantage of it. But it's a shame. It is literally a shame if the way you take advantage of it is to assume there are only two parties. Because if you're one of the 90% that agrees America is on the wrong track, that we are screwed up, that the people are screwed by Washington, D.C. and government, if you're one of those people that believes that, then you got to understand it's screwed up because there's only been two parties in charge, Republican and Democrat. Libertarians believe in smaller government. We believe in less government intervention. We believe in less government spending, less entitlements, lower taxes, more freedom, school choice. On every issue, it's about choice, it's about freedom, and it's about more competition and get government out of the way. And if that sounds like your kind of philosophy, well, then it's time to vote for Bob Barr and Wayne Root. LP, Libertarian Party, website, RootForAmerica.com.
And hey, we have had the opportunity to listen to a real bona fide vice presidential candidate. Got to say thank you very much to Justin Oldham for sorting that interview out for us. A big shout goes out to you. And also, I'd want to add my thanks to Wayne for giving up his time. I know it must be an incredibly busy time for any presidential candidate coming up close to the elections, and we certainly do appreciate him taking the time. But it is interesting that, you know, there are more than just two candidates running in the U.S. presidential election.
And, Martin, I would like to just make a comment to everyone that's listening to the sound of my voice. Exactly what Martin said. There are more options out there. Your vote is your vote. It's guaranteed here in the United States that you have that vote. Make the best vote you can. Don't vote Republican because you're registered Republican. Don't vote Republican because you think everybody else is voting Republican. Look at the candidates. Look at the Green Party. Look at there's just so many out there. Different candidates that look at their voting records. Look at who stands for what you believe in and cast your vote. Don't fall lockstep in with either the Democrats or the Republicans simply because it's the way it's always been done.
Absolutely. And just from a balance point of view, not only this show, but I know that the ATS Mix show also put in requests to interview other both presidential and vice presidential candidates. And in several occasions, we got to the brush off. So I don't want anyone thinking that we are pro or anti the Libertarian Party. We were just very lucky that Wayne Root was quite happy to talk to us. So we did try.
Well, but you know what, Martin? I'll make a comment on that. They were polite enough to return our emails and set up a time and do an interview with us. And like you said, we've contacted the other parties, and they did just flat out did not contact us back. And, you know, that's an issue with me.
Well, and I can't argue with that one. There are people in the UK and across Europe that I want to talk to who I'm pushing hard to try and get some interviews with. But you know, sometimes it can be a very balls aching and thankless task, but you and I are quite happy to do it. And you're right. I think, you know, Homer's absolutely spot on there. You know, this is your election. You need to go into that polling booth and you need to think, how is the best way that I can use my vote? And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to vote for the two obvious parties. You can sit down and say, actually, maybe I think this person, I want to send a message that this is the better person for the job. So.
And the only way any of these other third parties, like the Libertarian Party, which I agree with their basic foundation, the only way they're ever going to become a viable party here in the United States is if people do step up and vote for them.
Absolutely, and that's maybe something that maybe we'll pursue after the election campaign, is maybe talk to these parties again and see what changes they think need to be made so that it becomes a 3, 4, or 5 horse race rather than just the obvious 2 horse race. And, you know, at the start of this, if you'd have betted that the president was going to come from the Democrats or the Republicans, I don't think anyone would have taken your money.
I agree. It's a shame, but that's exactly the way it is.
That's the way it is. And we're just going to go into a quick break, and we will be back. Do you want to be part of the Above Politics show? Homer and I are looking for ATS members who want to contribute to the show. We are looking for members from around the world who can bring us what is going on in their neck of the woods and offer our listeners critical analysis on local and international events. So if you're interested, you can U2U or email either of us, Homer or Martin.
And we're back. This is Homer and Martin, in case you forgot. And I had recently had the opportunity to do an interview with one of ATS Above Top Secret's most solid, long-standing members and moderator extraordinaires, Chisler. And he gave us his opinions on the election coming up and the two candidates. And we're going to listen to that now. Hello, everyone. This is Homer Fife on the Above Politics show again. And Martin, the host of the show, is busy on the studio floor cutting and pasting away the next show and probably editing all of my wonderful comments out. However, I do have here with me an ATS member, long-standing ATS member, and moderator extraordinaire, Chisler. How are you, Chisler?
I'm doing great, and you are too kind.
Well, kindness has nothing to do with my job. However, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a citizen of the Great White North. I reside in the east coast of Canada, in Nova Scotia. I've been with the board for what seems to be decades, but I think it's been a little over 2 years. And I work in residential care for individuals with disabilities. And if I'm not logged into ATS, that's probably where you'd find me.
Wow, that's outstanding. That sounds kind of like me. I just can't seem to get away from it. Now, Chisler, I've noticed you on the boards talking about politics a little bit. So have you been following the elections here in the U.S.? And what is your immediate reaction to all the excitement that's going on down here?
Well, politics is something that I've always been interested in. And as a Canadian citizen, I am a little ashamed to say that American politics certainly interests me a hell of a lot more than our own. And the McCain-Obama, I guess, extraordinaire that's been going on for the previous weeks, months, and some may even say years, I've definitely been following it pretty closely, and I find it very intriguing, and I do feel that this election is going to have a very large impact on my own country as well.
Well, I don't think there's any denying the fact that this election has global implications, and of course, you being our next closest and most favorite neighbors, it's going to affect you guys directly as well. Now, that being said, you feeling like it's going to affect you, have you taken any steps to maybe campaign for or reach out to friends in the United States or that sort of thing to talk to them about what's going on down here?
I don't really have any immediate or extended friends or family in the U.S. at the moment, but it is certainly issues that I discuss frequently with friends and family up here. I mean, we're all ineligible to vote, but I mean, it makes for good discussion, if nothing else.
Oh, and I think this year, above all years, it's been great discussion.
I guess a key issue for me in this upcoming election is, I guess, the war on terror and whether or not the troops pull out of Iraq and, for that matter, Afghanistan. I don't think Afghanistan is any, I don't think they're going to be one and the same, but I have a lot of friends and some family that are serving overseas in Afghanistan at the moment, and that issue is pretty near and dear to me, so it is something that I follow pretty closely.
Well, now, that being said, I happen to know that you're an Obama supporter. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we did talk offline a little bit. So in regards to the war on terror, I actually had some other questions I was going to ask you, but let's go with that. I know that with you backing Obama, now I know that Obama has made some comments, not direct comments, but some comments about pulling the troops out. However, it would seem to me that McCain would be a better choice for the war on terror as somebody that would be more protective of the troops and would send more troops in, hence having less losses. What's your thoughts on that?
I wasn't really opposed to the war, but I certainly didn't support it. But it was kind of one of those things where to do nothing didn't seem like the right answer either. as time passed and information came out and everything seemed to become a little more transparent, I've slowly and slowly began to be opposed to the war more and more. And as a Canadian citizen who has friends in Afghanistan, it just seems to be that all of the efforts and attention went to Iraq, where Afghanistan is kind of playing second fiddle. And again, as a Canadian citizen who was directly impacted by 9/11, it just doesn't seem to be fair to those that were impacted on that day and the men and women that are serving overseas at the moment.
Now, okay, well then just tell me, and look, don't pull any punches here, Chisler. What do you feel about the search for Osama bin Laden and the absolute complete coming up empty-handed in a search for one man? How do you feel about that?
It's disheartening, to say the least, that this man has gone on so long and has enjoyed freedom where so many have not. And it really is disheartening to see how quick they found Saddam. And, I mean, he's long since left this earth, and we're still in Iraq, and we're still in Afghanistan, and yet he roams free. And I'm not really sure what the answer is. I don't really think Obama or McCain have the answer, but I do feel that Obama is going to take our men and women home much sooner. And for that, I would give him the thumbs up on that issue, because I don't see what we can accomplish over there in Iraq. I think in Afghanistan, I think that an effort needs to be made. And if we're going to be there, then let's make the effort and let's make that our priority.
Which leads me wonderfully into our next segment. I want to talk to you a minute, Chisler, about the candidates. And I'm going to kind of throw you under the bus, because I want your views on McCain.
My thoughts on McCain. I think McCain, he's a war hero. I think he can be a great leader. I think that coupled with his opponent and the current state of our whole society, the whole Western Hemisphere, for that matter, the whole globe, I just think that another time, another place, another running mate, maybe this could have worked out for him. But I just don't think the time is right for him. And not to get cheesy here, but I think we are in need of some change. And I just think that
you're right. That's cheesy, Chisler. That's cheesy. But that's all right.
But I don't know. I find that a little difficult because in the past, I always look fondly upon McCain. I just think that as this election played itself out, I've become more and more opposed to him.
Right. And fair enough. And I kind of threw you under the bus on that. But now talk to me about your favorite candidate, Obama. And then we're going to get into the vice presidents here in a little bit, because you mentioned a running mate. And I know you have strong views on Sarah Palin. And I really want to hear. Well, you do. And I really want to hear those. But talk to me about your candidate. What about Obama? I personally haven't heard anything specific come out of his mouth other than just change. And I don't know what kind of change he's talking about. Tell me what you think.
I'll get to the specifics in a moment, but through the Democratic primaries, I really didn't come down on one side of the fence, whether it was Hillary or Obama. I found myself at times actually rooting to see if Clinton would win the primary, but I never really came down on one side of the fence. When Obama finally did win the candidacy, I was excited, and I really began to engage his platform and everything he was saying. And I listened to his speeches regularly, and for the first time, I actually found myself being inspired and getting goosebumps from a politician. Now, I'm someone who does vote. I'm certainly not apathetic when it comes to politics, but I feel I get burned. I feel like I'll pay attention and I'll make the effort, but I don't feel that. Sometimes you don't get that back from the politicians, or it can be just so deflating and disheartening to see what citizens that do care, they really don't get very much in return, and you can kind of see why some people are so apathetic. But when it comes to Obama, I find he can really inspire people and really maybe really seek out the change that our society needs. And again, I'm probably getting a little cheesy here, and I'm not even an American citizen, but when I listen to this man speak, I mean, he really instills a bit of optimism in me for the future.
And you know what? There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. However, me personally, and I'm just going to interject here a little bit, that's one of the things that scares me. I tend to look at people that are too convincing in their rhetoric, and being a little suspicious. However, you know, that's just me.
You just reminded me, on the specifics there, I can agree with what you're saying. I disagree, but I can see where you're coming from. But when it comes to the specifics, throughout the debates, I watch the debates fairly closely. I feel that the truth is actually more evident in McCain as opposed to Obama. Neither candidate really answers the questions too directly. It seems like they do everything they can but offer an honest question. But I feel that McCain, when you ask him a direct question, I mean, he manages to find his way out of it every single time. And Obama is guilty of this frequently, but I find, and I'll steal this from you, he is the lesser of two evils, I think, on this one.
Okay. And, you know, I'm just not, well, like we've talked offline, I'm not a 100% convinced McCain supporter, so I really don't have a whole lot to argue with you on there. Now let's get into a subject that's near and dear to you. We'll talk about Biden in a minute, but first I want to hear what you think about the lovely, talented Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin. Well, as we chatted about before, I try not to buy into some of the mass media and the way they're presenting her. I mean, her gaffes are what they are. But, and as I mentioned earlier, anyone who watched or heard her speech there maybe a day or two ago on special needs children and what she would do if her ticket were elected, her son, I believe it's a son, does have Down syndrome, and a sister of hers has an autistic child.
Yes.
And when she spoke on these issues, she just seemed so real and so honest and so kind-hearted, and she didn't seem like this, not to be offensive here, but bumbling idiot that you see almost almost on any other issue. I mean, the Katie Couric interview was what it was. I find in her speeches sometimes she's just, I don't know, it's almost as if like this is just a running gag and someone's going to pop out behind the curtain and say, gotcha. But when she gave this speech, it just really, I mean, if this were the only clip you were to see of Governor Palin, I mean, I think you would have a highly, highly different view of her, assuming the listener here has a negative view on her. And I just think that she's presented herself in a way that really isn't doing herself justice. And again, maybe in the future, she's someone who may be in a position or capable of running that country, but I just don't think the time is right for her.
Well, now, do you think maybe she's just inexperienced in giving public speeches? I mean, it's hard to talk off the cuff if you're not experienced doing it.
Certainly, and coming from Alaska, I mean, I can't imagine anything she's ever been through compares to anything what she's been put through the previous weeks. And, I mean, you can factor that in a little bit, but, and I guess you can say Obama, like that's the, one of the key arguments against him is his lack of experience. And I don't want to be hypocritical and kind of ignore that and place that upon Palin. But again, she is the VP. She is the VP, but I would, if the argument was who is more underqualified, like Obama or Palin, I would say Obama is much more qualified to be the commander in chief than she would be VP. And I know there's a discrepancy on the positions, but I feel she's at least 10 to 15 years away from ever being considered for such a position.
Fair enough. All right. Let's get to one of my favorite subjects, Senator Biden. And I'll tell you what, I want your total views on that, but I really want to get into some meat here. I want to hear what you think about Biden's comment on the fact that if Obama is elected president, he's going to be tested. And I thought that might have been a gaffe on his part, and there's been some airtime on it, but not much. Now, what do you think about that?
A gaffe would be an understatement and then some. As I mentioned earlier, through the afternoon sometimes when I'm at work, I manage a few minutes here and there to watch some coverage on CNN. And when I first heard of this, I had my head in my hands, and I couldn't believe it, because of all gaffes, if you're gonna stick your foot in your mouth and you're gonna shed light on an issue that you really don't want to touch on, do not let it be national security with Obama. Because, I mean, the ticket was so successful on focusing on the economy and hammering on it. And, I mean, the polls, I think, indicated that everybody was talking about the issues that were going to benefit him best. And here comes Joe bringing this up for God knows what reason. And, I mean, they're really going to instill a bit of fear in the voters. And like you had said, when they get in there and they get in that box and they got to pull one of the levers, you never know what's going to happen. And Joe is certainly not helping his ticket here by sticking his foot in his mouth like he did.
Now, I know that we're running a little long here, Chisler, but I'd really like to keep this going. Now, you're talking about what I'd like to hear now is, what does Biden bring to the table? What exactly do you think Biden brings to that team of Obama-Biden that makes him as valuable as Obama and some of the supporters apparently think he is?
I think that's a great question. I think when you consider the two, Obama and McCain, and you really emphasize the weaknesses, and you look at each person and you say, like, what is their lacking? I think that everything that Obama lacks, Biden brings to the table. And between the two of them, I think they're a very, very strong ticket. And again, this is one of the reasons that I'm leaning more towards Obama, because when you look at McCain and the weaknesses that he has, I don't think Governor Palin does anything to offset those. If anything, I think she kind of brings out the weaknesses that that ticket has. But when it comes to Biden, I really think he offsets any weakness that you can find in Obama. And when you put the two of them together, I think you really have one hell of a ticket.
And fair enough. Fair enough. You obviously know I could argue that, but we won't get into that.
But as a specific, because I think I lacked a bit of a specific there, I think his experience in foreign policy, because I think that's what Obama lacks. I think that would be the key argument when it comes to national security and foreign policy and whatnot. And I think with Biden's experience, I really think he offsets that weakness that one could find in Obama.
And there's no arguing the fact that Biden has extensive foreign policy experience. I'm not going to make any comments on whether it was good experience or bad experience. However, this is a fair and balanced show. So, you did mention something, though, that was interesting that I'd like to bring back out here. I can't for the life of me think what the syndrome is called, where a voter may talk a good game and he may even answer a poll one way, but when he walks in that voting booth, especially down in the South, and has to push that button for a black candidate, will they do it? What do you think on that?
I mean, it's something I really don't want to put too much stock into, but I think that if you ignore it, I think you're being naive yourself. And I'm not sure the specifics on it, but I believe what I've seen in the media that it was referred to as the Bradley effect. I'm not sure who he was, but he was a mayor apparently that was running for city council maybe, and I guess the polls were indicating that he was going to in fact win, and then on election day, they just didn't vote for him, and I guess they refer to this as the Bradley effect. And whether or not that's going to prove to be true in 10 days remains to be seen. I certainly hope not, and I would like to think that the American voters can rise above this, but, I mean, society is what it is, and this certainly isn't to single out American citizens, because if this goes, I mean, this is worldwide. The human race has come very little when it comes to judging and hatred and et cetera, and when it comes to electing a black man to the highest office there is, I mean, it remains to be seen what they're going to do. I certainly hope they do. I feel he's the right man for the job, but time will only tell.
All right, Chisler, one last thing before we go. There's been some talk about Osama bin Laden actually releasing a statement just before the election, and there's also been some talk about us possibly experiencing an attack. There actually was even some postulation about the fact that it could be a large attack. The thing that mystifies me, and I've spoken to Martin, the host of the show, about this, I don't understand. It would seem to me that Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, all of... But it seems to me that all of these people would be happier if Obama got in with his lack of foreign policy experience than someone as strong and committed as McCain is toward national security. How do you feel if Osama bin Laden comes out with a statement prior to the election? How do you feel this is going to affect the election, or do you feel it will affect it at all?
Well, I certainly think it would have to have an effect. I would hope it wouldn't. But again, to get into the mind of that man, I mean, one can only imagine. I'm really not sure how it would affect the election. I mean, we would have to wait and see what in fact he had to say. But I think I was watching something on CNN the other day where there was an Al-Qaeda website being monitored, and an article was put up threatening, or I guess it was promoting an attack on the U.S. before the election. And I think they were, whoever put this up was actually supporting McCain and hoping that McCain actually won. And again, this could have been just some random person, but they had said that he was a regular contributor to this board. They were promoting that they were hoping McCain would win. So I think that's unfortunate for McCain. He's got Al-Qaeda supporting him and anybody else.
Yeah, that can't be good.
You can't buy it. Well, I mean, Biden's doing his part, but other than that.
Right. Well, Chisler, thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, this has been Homer Fife. I've been talking to ATS member and moderator Chisler. As always, if you have an opinion and want your opinions heard, if you'll send me an email or a U2U or Martin an email or a U2U, we will put you on the air. We will get your opinion, and you can be heard by all our many listeners. Thank you, Chisler, and we'll definitely have you back on right after the election for your input, if that's okay with you.
Anytime.
Outstanding. This has been Homer Fife. Thank you. Chisler, thank you very much. As always, articulate and an intelligent response, and I appreciate it. Hey, Martin, there's some kind of book coming out. Isn't a Jim Morris book coming out here pretty soon?
There certainly is. An ATS book or AboveTopSecret.com book is coming out, and there is a thread if you want to go and post your questions to Jim Mars. Jim will be on the ATS Mix show coming up sometime before the end of the year. And if you go to the ATS section and look at the guests, there is a thread for you to post your questions. The only thing I would say, and I know Dave and Johnny will say the same thing, just have a look through the previous questions just to see that the question you want to ask hasn't been asked before, because if you're the second or third person to ask the question, you're not likely to get your name mentioned, and we don't want any disappointed members here.
Now, hey, Martin, do you think that if we talk up real big, they'll send us a copy of the book?
I'm not sure that could be regarded as abusing our position and power here, but hey, if they wanted to send a signed copy, I don't suppose you and I would complain.
Not in the least. I think it'd be great.
It would be great. And guess what? The next time we record a show, you may well have a new, well, you will have a new president, or you will have a new president elect.
Yes, we will. And I'll tell you something, Martin. I'm a political animal. I've been into politics for, I don't know, as long as I can remember. I will never be so glad that something is over in my entire life as when this election's over. Even as much, I don't even care who gets elected.
Yeah.
The board will calm down. A lot of this stuff will just go away.
Will it? Or will there now be the debate regarding, who was the election fair and square? And whoever wins the other side, someone will dig up and say, well, you know, illegal, you know, too many people registered to vote. The machines were rigged. Oh, I didn't get the opportunity to do that one. I suspect it will be more than a few weeks before it dies down. And if it's anything as last presidential campaign, hey, if it's close, it could well end up in the courts.
Oh, make no mistake about it. When I said it's over, I didn't mean November 5th. You're 100% correct. It's not going to be over November 5th. There's going to be court actions. There's going to be fraud allegations. There's going to be voting machine allegations. And whoever loses is going to make the most allegations. And they'll all be investigated. And then come to find out, nothing will come of it like it always does. And the losing side will spend the next 4 years talking about how they were cheated out of the election. It's the same old song. It's just 4 years apart.
And it will be fun. But guess what? Next time, we'll have hopefully have a new presidential elect. And we're getting close to running out of time. So I wanted to say thank you very much to our guests, Wayne Root and Chisler. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate that. And we will see you next time on the Above Politics Show. I have been Martin Bain.
And I am still Homer Fife. Hello, everyone. This is Homer Fife again on the Above Politics Show, and this is just the way I see it. The vice presidential candidates have been getting a lot of air this election, and it strikes me as just one of the strangest things. Disregarding all the hoopla and the consternation over Vice President Cheney, your vice president is really nothing more than a cheerleader for the president and an assistant in getting him reelected for his next term. Yet people seem to be spending a large portion of their time on Sarah Palin. Not so much Joe Biden as, well, old Joe, he's nothing more than an old political hack with deep and unrestricted roots in the corruption that's rampant in today's political scene. But now in comes Sarah Palin. She's young, she's outspoken, and oh my God, she's conservative. What the... We can't have our women out there voicing an opinion, especially not one that's a crazy, gun-toting, back-of-chewing kids-on-the-porch conservative view. What was McCain thinking? And just listen to how she talks. She talks like she's a real person. Disgraceful. She doesn't sound anything like a polished, rehearsed political hack. Nope, she sounds just like you and me. She makes mistakes. What with all the predictions that McCain will die in his first week in office, What could we possibly have been thinking putting her in a vice presidential seat? Fools. Fools we are. And elections pass, people. It is a foundational principle that no one votes for the vice president. They vote for the president. We can only surmise that maybe this year we're going to be historic in another sense. The first black candidate, and possibly more actual votes cast for a vice presidential candidate or against. However, we might never know. Exit polls are historically inaccurate, and people aren't going to tell the truth. So, combined with the Bradley effect and more polls than any other election in history, we have to contend with Sarah Palin lovers and Sarah Palin haters. Not to mention the Sarah Palin strip contests, the Sarah Palin look-alike contests, and every time we turn on Saturday Night Live, we see Sarah Palin. Well, all I'm asking tonight is that you get out and vote. At this stage in the game, I don't care who you vote for. Just go cast your vote for the man or woman you feel best represents your personal interests and that you feel will benefit this country over the next 4 years. And remember, when it's all over, after all the dust has died down, give myself and Martin a U2U or an email, and we'll put you on a future show, and we'll let you talk about what happened. You can talk about the winner, the losers, why you think we were robbed, or maybe why you think we were blessed. People, this is Homer Fife, and that's just how I see it.
You've been listening to the Above Politics Show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at abovepolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics Show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.